Welcome, investigator. Evil is on the rise. Crime is escalating. Our mission is to eliminate the crime by exposing evil, examine why it manifests, and highlight the brave souls that confront it every day. Join us as we work together to bring justice to every victim. Welcome to All Things Crime. Here's your host, Jared Bradley.
Hey, everybody. It's Jared. Welcome to another episode of All Things Crime. I'm here with my main man, Tom Myers. And wow, boy, this morning, we wanted to jump on and get a quick update out to you. We've done a number of episodes on Chris Tapp. And as you know, way back when, 2019, something like that, I was actually able to meet Chris Tapp in person up in Boise, Idaho, and show him the MVAC system, talk about how the MVAC helped him get out of prison, along with the Innocence Project and all those folks up there. And then, you know, we heard, what was it, Tom? 5-6 months ago, maybe, that he had passed away. That it initially, all the reports were he died at a hotel, and it was like an accident. He fell down some stairs or something like that. And now evidence has come out. And in fact, a guy has been arrested for his murder. So after all the stuff that we've been talking about and the tragedy of Chris Tapp's life, now we find out that he was actually murdered. So, Tom, I mean, the level of craziness with this entire scenario, Chris's life, you know, serving 20 years for a crime that he didn't commit, the horrendous murder of Angie Dodge, the way Angie's mom, Carol, got involved, does this drama ever stop?
Right. No, it doesn't. This is on par with Fatty Arbuckle or O.J. Simpson, you know, with the celebrities and everybody involved in this thing. So, rather in depth. Would you like me to bring people up to speed, kind of what we know and the facts?
Yeah.
Start with that.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I've been reading up on it too. And just, yeah, go ahead. You know what?
Okay. And so, you know, a bit in the background, it seems to be this F1 driver or this group is somewhat associated with Chris, and he had some money and they went over to Las Vegas, and this wrestler guy, I'm just going to call him wrestler guy, this 6'7" behemoth, 300 pounds, really big guy, who's the offender in this case. So they're all affiliated with each other, and they managed to get themselves a resort or suite with a party room, is what the press says. And this is an amalgamation of sources coming in on this. And in the back room, let's talk about the bad stuff first. There's drugs out there. This has come right from the search warrant. Cocaine is out in the front, and that's there, the party room, the quote party room in the background over here. And apparently, taking from the context of everything, this is a common practice, or it was understood that this is what it's going to be on a Halloween night. So the stipulation was put forth from our wrestler was that no cocaine is to be around his stepdaughter, and this seems to be the trigger event that happened here. Now, let's talk about a couple other things jumping off from that to bring people up to speed. The bad things: Chris did have marijuana and alcohol and cocaine in his system at time of death, and his arrests subsequent to that. And the reason I'm sort of stumbling on my words, I'm a little disappointed because this is considered an accident, and you know, I kind of owe you a walk back apology on this, because I said the ME is not going to call it anything that it's not when we last spoke, and it turns out to be not the case. So they're going to need to amend that death certificate. But I don't know. I find that there has to be some reason why that got that way, because either the story was that he fell and hurt himself and I bled out right there, or it seems to me that something didn't happen that should have happened when this medical examiner certificate was signed off on, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm wondering if, you know, maybe somebody came forward later, you know, they just couldn't, it just didn't make sense. You know, if everybody at the party was kind of especially an F1 driver, you know, I can't imagine he would want to be involved with anything. And so, you know, all of a sudden they're at a Halloween party, and next thing you know, someone gets arrested for murder. So, or, you know, someone actually gets killed at their party. I can't fathom that anybody wanted to say, you know, actually what happened. So who knows, you know? So my kind of assumption is maybe at the very beginning, somebody was leaving some details out. And so, you know, if you have cocaine and marijuana and alcohol in your system, and you know, there's no, well, if you're that jacked up, and then you trip and fall and hit your head on the tub or something, which I think they could have easily said that was the problem, and that was the cause of the blunt force trauma, then maybe it could have been revealed as an accident. But from the things that I was reading, this guy was choking him out. You know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know if he was striking Chris. Now, Chris isn't a really big guy. I remember when I was actually standing right next to him, I think, so I'm 6'1", about 230. And I think I was at least 3 or 4 inches taller than Chris. And, you know, I probably had him by at least 50 pounds. But so, you know, some, like you said, behemoth that's 6'7", 300 pounds, he's just going to be absolutely massive compared to Chris. And, you know, I would imagine that Chris, after spending 20 years in prison, probably had a fairly quick trigger, and, you know, had probably been in a few rounds. And so, you know, maybe he wasn't intimidated by this guy, but the bottom line is, if they get into it physically, he's not going to be able to handle a 6'7", 300 pound, you know, former, you know, professional wrestler type. And especially if you're trapped in a bathroom and if you're jacked up on drugs. So yeah, I it doesn't sound to me like it was a fair fight, let alone a scenario that he could have got out of very, very quickly. So these professional wrestler types, you know, this guy, especially based on the text message that his wife was, you know, texted to him, you know, basically called him a psychopath. So do you want to, you know what, discuss that a little bit. I mean, that text message, you know what, do you have that? I can, let me bring
it. I do. I've read it, and you know, it's hard to go back and forth in time on this. So let's give the benefit of the doubt to the medical examiner's office, like you said, on this, and witnesses are saying that, and then it gets modified afterwards. You know, if it was rushed through because of the publicity and something like that, it's a slippery slope. So let's say that's not the case. That's not the case. But you know, I'm used to going off of when the medical examiner states something, they state something, and then there's a reason for it. And each state is different, like I said. But I'm looking at the I believe it's Clark County, and what they follow is the national guidelines. It seems to be the case over here. So let's just dismiss all that part to it. And like you said, our offender is also a tough guy competition. You know, he's a contender in that. So he knows his way around in these things. And you can't really get in a wrestling ring. You know, I coached that and did combat sports for a while, so I know that way around. And I can tell you, if you're a JV wrestler, you can pretty much beat somebody very easily. Or even a blue belt jiu-jitsu, very, very capable of doing that. So, I mean, it's so unmatched over here. And then, you know, you also have to take into account victim precipitation. Let's make it as bad as possible. Be devil's advocate. You know, alcohol, some people can't handle it. The process is different. They antagonize people. Could that have possibly happened? But still, it doesn't excuse what's being alleged here, which all came like a waterfall in the past 48 hours when we, maybe even 24 hours, we read this. But yeah, when they tracked that back and they pulled out the text messages from his wife, said exactly that, you know, let that sink in, you psychopath. Yeah, I know. That's, yeah. You just killed somebody. Yeah.
I want to read the text messages.
Please do.
And
yeah.
These are direct quotes, and these are between Rodimer, the suspect, and his wife. And she says, "I watched you nearly murder somebody, and I had to take your expletive hands off from his neck as he laid there, and you ran away, and I spent the next 2 hours trying to take care of him. Nobody should have to watch their husband murder somebody." Then she reportedly texted, "I watched you murder somebody, like, let that sink in, you psychopath." So yeah, she's apparently, she, you know, there's a history here. And, you know, for her to text that, number one, she's not with him, you know, but this guy runs away like, you know, some kind of a coward. But I think once he realized what he did, And, you know, this guy's not stupid. I mean, he ran for Congress twice. But like you said, he was in a number of tough man competitions and things like that. So physically, this guy is pretty intimidating. Maybe he doesn't know his own strength, but if he had Chris by the neck and he was pounding on him, and this is after Chris hit his head. So if he's kind of, you know, delirious and out of it anyway, you know, that first hit, it's whoever gets that in most of the time is going to win the fight anyway. So from the sounds of it, Chris didn't have a chance. I mean, it was over before it even began, but then this psychotic dude basically keeps choking him and he's pounding on him. And then, you know, that's the additional trauma that he had, especially to his head. And from the reports from the first responders there, you know, they were saying he was laying on the bed. He was delirious, didn't know his own name. And, you know, even by the time they transported him and then 5 days later, he dies. So,
yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we're not privy to the case file right here. So, like I said, it's from my background and everything else, you know, I'm like, wow, we're relying on that. But let's say that the witnesses immediately said, in devil's advocate and hypothetical here, the guy came at him with a weapon, you know, he's just defending himself, but he was drunk and he was, you know, all messed up and everything else, but he fell. And that has happened. Two actors, Bob Saget was one, fell on that. And William Holden, exsanguinated, he bled out in same circumstance, hit a coffee table. So, I mean, it happens a lot in the movies. It happens pretty rarely, but it does happen. So, I mean, they have to go with the facts and let the evidence bring up to him. So I'm going to, like, you know, say all that because this would have brought a lot of scrutiny very early on this, and this name didn't come up. So congressional candidate, you know, coming up within 3% of the vote, I think in Nevada, yeah, when he ran. So yeah, pretty well known name. So anyway, but they all seem to know each other is what I'm getting in the chatter and everything else. So,
And from the sounds of it, you know, it was just a high profile, you know, invitation only elite types. I mean, if F1 driver and congressional and a dude that had lots of money, and it was just a big Halloween party. So, and then, you know, they had the quote, unquote party room off in a bathroom off of a side bedroom. So, you know, they just got out of control, but from the sounds of it probably could have been just a regular high profile, like Halloween party. And then things just got out of control. So, but I, you know, my first reaction, and I saw a lot of the comments on some of the articles that was posted, people are like, well, what do you bring in your stepdaughter to a party that has cocaine? Well, you know, the guy may not have known. And I'm sure he was just bringing his stepdaughter, because if you can meet an F1 driver and, you know, some actors and who knows who else is going to show up. So I wouldn't look into that too much, but at the same time, if you have a minor there, you know, your daughter, your stepdaughter, and you go into a party and you find out there's drugs there, especially if you have something to lose, like you've run for Congress and, you know, that kind of stuff, it's like, have the brains to leave. You know, you don't have to stay there. It's like, especially as a parent, I mean, if I ever walked into a party and I don't care who's there, and I find out there's drugs and all sorts of, you know, alcohol's flowing, it's like, you know what? We ain't staying here. But, you know, apparently this Rotoman guy, you know, doesn't have the common sense to understand that. And clearly he probably believed he could control any situation based on his past. So, yep.
They report a history of violence, a history of assault or battery, whatever you want to call it in that state. I'm not sure what the charges are and where they track back to, but, you know, that's what they say. And, you know, I'm cautious on this because I've seen things get polluted out to the press, and then it's the wrong story completely. And it's, that becomes the narrative, and then it becomes repeated over and over. So I'm trying to weave in some maybes into the entire account over here and give the benefit of the doubt on this. So, you know, but it doesn't, I mean, when you get to the point when you need to arrest somebody, it sounds like it's pretty, they're going to put those facts, and they're going to allege those facts and either into an indictment or a probable cause affidavit of some kind of charging document, which is the case, or the search warrant in that case too. So I saw the news got a copy of that. But yeah, so now he's got a problem. And then what goes with the drugs if he's involved with this? Here's the problem with the police are trying to deal with facts and they're trying to assess people. And when you start, as soon as you move into that drug world, you're moving into tradecraft and deception. You have to hide that from everybody. And once you do that, the police investigators tend to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but it's not a pejorative when I say that. It's just like you can't trust anything anybody says now. And so you're trying to bring a witness who's going to tell you the truth and you're not getting the full truth. And it's very hard. It's very difficult. And that's the frustration. So you hear those terms like misdemeanor, homicide, that this is the case. But you hear those things that come out because of the frustration that they deal with, that they're trying to deal with. And they're going to allocate those resources to folks who are going to tell them the truth. That becomes a natural byproduct of that. And I hate to say it's the case, but that's very much the case because you can't know who to trust anymore on those things. So it's a strong victim precipitation part of things like this when that happens.
Yeah. Well, but at the same time, I think those text messages are so damning. It's like if the police didn't have any kind of a suspects and they thought it was just a, well, even after the cause of death was determined and everything else, apparently the police were still investigating it. And I imagine they subpoenaed phone records and maybe it took them this long to really get all the phone records and go through them all. But that text message from his wife, wow. You know, I mean, unless she was setting him up, which from the sounds of it, it doesn't appear that way, but geez, you know, for her to call him a psychopath and then actually say, you know, I had to pull you off of, you know, you had your hands around his neck. That's pretty damning to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like that's probably what unraveled and that would support that change of the death certificate. You can see I'm kind of bothered by the entire fact there, the change of the death certificate. Well, what do you do then? You're going to change the death certificate. I'm sure there's not a timeline to do that, but the public has a, I don't want to say the public has a right to know, but the public has a right to know because they're basing that on there. And I mean, I'll also add that we're involved with MBAC, of course, and that's an exoneree from that. You know, that's our genesis case on this. And this guy has deserved better than that, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of a rough thing all the way around to see somebody, you know, walk into this buzzsaw like that and then have such a sad ending to it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Chris, oh my gosh, man, come on. I mean, oh, you know, folks, if you fall into tragedy and then ultimately are blessed with the ability to not only get out of that tragedy, but also you're rewarded in some way, like Chris was. I mean, he was only 47 when he was killed, but he was 40 basically when he got out of prison.
Right.
So, you know, he had a short 7 years, and about three of those, it took him, I think, 3 to 4 years after he was let out of prison that it was finally exonerated. And then he actually received that cash payment for the wrongful incarceration. And then, you know, so he had all of maybe 3 years where he actually had reward and he had, you know, but at that point, you know, he had millions of dollars in the bank. It's like, dude, stay out of trouble. You know, to me, that's the part that I just don't get. I mean, Chris was such a good guy. He was, even when he was first let out of prison and I first met him, and I interviewed him. Actually, he was one of my first interviews on the podcast. So you can go way back to the very beginning of this podcast and you can actually see what Chris was like shortly after he was let out of prison. He was just so glad and so grateful to just get out of there and just be free that and at the time he had nothing. He was broke but he was just, and I can't remember exactly what job, you know, he got some job there in East Idaho and he was just working. He was like, I'm just moving on. He wasn't extremely bitter. He wasn't vengeful. He was just like, I'm just so glad to be out of jail that I just want to get on and, you know, build my life from here. Well, he finally reached the point where, yeah, he was rewarded for the pain and suffering that he had gone through, you know, the 20 years in prison for as an innocent man. And yet somehow he ends up down in Las Vegas at a high profile party and, you know, just gets all jacked up and on drugs. And then ultimately now he's dead. And I mean, the tragedy just keeps building. There's so many layers to this tragedy. It's just like, it's crazy.
Yeah, and there's addiction has such a powerful pull. It just does. I work with folks a lot, and they return back to it. It's almost like a kink in a aluminum can. You can't ever get it straight again. It is always there. So, I mean, if he had that with a 20-year void in between, I don't care. You know, that kink is still there, and that has such a powerful pull. And if we're going to talk predicating events such as, you know, is alcohol or marijuana a gateway drug that leads to poor judgment in between, and then you've already done those two things, another step there. You know, I don't know what the firing order was over there that caused either poor behavior or whatever caused this entire thing. But, I mean, it's just a bad scene, you know, for the world you and I live in. That's a huge Rubicon to ever cross. But, you know, if you're going to live in that world, or you're going to make things a little bit gray to get involved and maybe make a business venture with people that dabble in that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's a walk on the wild side, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right. So, well, the bottom line is Chris wasn't just, he just didn't accidentally fall down a flight of stairs. He was actually murdered. And so we'll see where the case actually goes, you know, once it goes to trial. But from the sounds of it, I don't know.
This is going to be a good one. Yep.
It's pretty damning. And, you know, when this actually goes to trial, I'm sure 2020 and Dateline and everybody else is all going to be there. But it's, yeah, well, bottom line is, sadly, our friend Chris Tapp is gone. And the way he died, I mean, to me, it was even more tragic if he had just, you know, so intoxicated or whatever that he fell down a flight of stairs and hit his head hard enough that it cause his death. But now we know that supposedly, at least, this huge 6'7", 300-pound dude basically beat him to death. So, yeah, end of a tragic life.
Probably the end of another, you know, life too is going to happen over here. I mean, who knows what's going to happen in trial, but this is going to get teased out through the discovery process and whatever the steps are for the Nevada court system. But bit by bit, you know, there's a good amount of information that's out there. And now they're going to circle the wagons because, you know, it's pretty overt. Everybody knows who was attending the party and everything else. And so there's not much else to it. This isn't a big whodunit. Doesn't seem to hinge too much on physical evidence. There's going to be a good amount there, but it's not a I wasn't there type thing. It sounds like it's pretty, yeah. So this ought to be interesting.
You're talking about ruined lives. I mean, this guy, the Rodeman, had six kids and a wife, and so their life is turned upside down now too. It's just, boy, it just the list just goes on and on. So. Well, anyway, yeah, folks, we just wanted to give you guys a heads up and kind of an update on what we're learning about Chris Tapp and how his life tragically ended. Again, he didn't deserve this, Ed,
It's hard to even process the information that's coming so fast in that. It's packed in there. You're like, how did this all, unwind and stuff like that? But, you know, there's a cautionary tale in there somewhere. I mean, so many bad things have happened on this case and, you know, loss of temper, use of drugs, so many things, you know, overkill. I mean, you know, and this is not a video game where people get back up. This guy's old enough to know this, but, you know, about to see some consequences for all this. So,
yeah, well, if you're living the fast life, then you can expect that things are going to come at you really fast. And unless you're actually prepared for it, it can end badly really fast. So, all right, guys. Well, Tom, I appreciate it. And yeah, hope you enjoy this update. Definitely subscribe to the program and give us some comments. If you learn of anything else about Chris Tapp, then please let us know. And we appreciate all of you. And share this story, please. And like I said before, please subscribe. So, All right, Tom. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later. Right.
Sounds good. Take care.
Thanks for joining us. Your attention today brings us one step closer to exposing and eliminating the evil that brings crime to our communities. Hit subscribe and share this episode. Together, we will bring justice to every victim.